It's day two of PFTPM. They let us come back. Shireen, congratulations on not saying anything yesterday that God has canceled. You had a questionable tweet last night, though, that we'll get to later that shows you've been hanging around me a little bit too much, but we will get to that. So I have good news. We're not canceled. Better news. Remember I said yesterday that this is kind of nice because we're just on Peacock and we don't have to get into saying hello to any other audiences. Well, that lasted all of one day. Because sources close to me tell me, Shireen, that on Sky Sports NFL at 11 o'clock local in the UK and Ireland, our show is on tonight. So the next challenge is to not get thrown off of there. We've managed to stay on Peacock. Now we get a spot on Sky Sports NFL, and we'll see if we can make that one-day thing into a two-day thing. Shireen, hello. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Mike. It's day two and we've gone global. I mean, what better can you ask than that? Didn't get canceled and we went global in one day. So it must have been okay yesterday.
We get accused of not knowing any cities in the UK other than London. We mention London all the time. We are aware of other cities. My question for you is, in Texas, are you aware of other cities in the UK than London?
Manchester.
There you go. That works. That's it. That's good.
Yeah, okay.
That's good. Let's not push it. You never know. You never know if that name that kind of sounds like a city in the UK really is. Manchester works. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if people saw today, but if you are on Peacock, the club is getting less exclusive all the time. Comcast CEO Brian Roberts said that since July, there have been 5 million more subscribers, 15 million in all to the Peacock service. So this is one of the free things about Peacock. You're guaranteed to get your money's worth if you watch PFTPM. So let's get right to it. We have 2 hours of content for a one-hour bag, and it begins in Chicago, where receiver Allen Robinson, one of the guys entering a contract year, Shireen, who didn't get a long-term deal, now fully and officially disgruntled and reportedly has asked for a trade out of town as he gets one game into what is the final year of that deal. Your reaction to Allen Robinson wanting out, supposedly?
Well, you know, Ryan Pace, the general manager of the Bears, said last week that there was no deadline on these deals, but the Bears typically, as most teams do, get their long-term deals with their core players wrapped up before the season opener. Now, here we are past the season opener in week two, and he still doesn't have his deal, and it tells you that they haven't made extensive progress on negotiations. And so he has asked for a trade, according to Brad Biggs of the Chicago Tribune, and is looking to get out. And who knows where this goes at this point, but he scrubbed all mention of the Bears from his social media and is obviously not happy with what's going on. These things tend to get worked out one way or the other, whether that means a trade or whether that means a long-term deal. It's probably going to get worked out one of those ways.
I think we can say football season officially has begun when a player scrubs all mention of his team from his social media accounts. And every time I even think that, much less write it or say it, I realize how trite and superficial that is. But that's how people send messages nowadays. What they allow onto their social media page, what's on their profile, what's in their background, what they are wearing, all of that stuff shows how they feel. And if you take all references to the Bears off your social media page and you're a member of the Bears, that may mean that you want out. Last year, 98 catches, a career high for Allen Robinson, 1,147 yards and 7 touchdowns. He's still yet to live up to the standard he set in his second year in Jacksonville in 2015. But a lot of that was garbage time production, all due respect. That was the year that we let ourselves think Blake Bortles is a good quarterback. They were behind. They threw the ball. They gained a lot of yardage that way. I think Allen Hurns also had 1,000 receiving yards that year in 2015, if not 1,000 close to it. But since then, 883. 2017, he had 17 after he suffered a week one torn ACL, 754 his first year in Chicago. He's now climbed back to 1147. I can see why he wants to get paid. And, you know, when you see a guy like Marlon Mack in Indy in a contract year, Shireen, suffer a torn Achilles tendon, and he's done for the year after 1 week. And when your personal history in the NFL includes a week one ACL tear, you know what the risk is and you know what can happen. And his market goes goes out the window if he suffers an injury that ends his season and sends him onto the free agent market while he's recovering from some sort of a season-ending injury. So I understand why he wants his deal.
No question about it. And he's making $10.9 million this year, and he looked at what Keenan Allen got. There have been obviously a lot of receiver contracts that we've seen this offseason, but Keenan Allen compares favorably. Keenan Allen's played one more year than Allen Robinson has, but if you observe their stats, they're pretty darn close to what they've done. In fact, Allen Robinson has only one fewer touchdowns than Keenan Allen does, despite playing one fewer years. And I would argue that Allen Robinson has not played with very many good quarterbacks, if any good quarterbacks, in his career. As you said, Blake Bortles, and now he's with Mitchell Trubisky, so he hasn't played with a really good quarterback. He's only 27. Somebody's going to want him, whether it's now in a trade, whether it's after this season with a big contract, if they can't get the extension done. Somebody is going to want Allen Robinson. Is he worth $20 million a year? I think that's what the Bears probably are grappling with at this point. Is he worth that? And I'm not sure he is, but that's what the market bears.
And I think part of the challenge when you pay a receiver big money is having the confidence that you will have a quarterback who can allow you to get the return on your investment. That has to be part of this. They don't know who their quarterback is going to be next year. Their starter, Mitchell Trubisky, is in the last year of his contract. Why? Because they didn't pick up the fifth-year option. Why? Because he stunk last year. And to consider that Allen Robinson got 1,147 receiving yards in a year where Mitchell Trubisky played like crap, I think we can say crap at 5 p.m. Eastern time. We definitely can say it at 11 p.m. local time in the U.K. We have done the research. Crap is acceptable. Then it really creates a conundrum for the Bears on what they're going to do, because who's the quarterback going to be and what kind of production are you going to get? And do you really get the bang for your buck if you give this guy big money? Was last year a fluke? That's the thing. He's got two full seasons with the Bears. 754 in the year the team was good, 1147 in the year the team was bad. What do you really get for this guy over the long haul?
Well, and the question for the Bears is, what's going to happen after this year, as you said, with the quarterback, but with the GM, with the coach, with everything else? This is a team with a roster that's very much in flux heading into next year, and a lot depends, obviously, on how they do this year. They need a happy and healthy Allen Robinson if they're going to do what they think they can do, which is duplicate a couple years ago when they got to the playoffs and they were a really good football team. But they need Allen Robinson, and they need him to be happy if that's going to happen. So they're really in a bad spot with how much to give him, what the future looks like, especially with the salary cap going forward, and how much he means to your football team. And he means a lot this year, but he's going to mean a lot next year and the year after, especially if there's a new coach, a new quarterback, and all that new stuff that teams go through when they don't win. So they're in a tough spot right now. They didn't get this done when they probably should have gotten it done, which was before Keenan Allen got his deal done.
And here's the reality. You know, we see this every year. Players want out. Sometimes they get out. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes the team says there's no way in hell we're letting the guy out, and then they let him out. It all depends upon what gets offered to the Chicago Bears for Allen Robinson, a former Jaguars player. And we've seen a couple of Jaguars players who wanted out, and the team said, we're not letting you go. But then when you get 2 1s and a 4 for Jalen Ramsey, or a second-round pick plus for Yannick Ngakoue, that's when you say yes. And that may be what the Bears ultimately do. And I think part of it is you sit and you wait for the season to shake out. And if it means Allen Robinson has an injury or an injury that keeps him from playing until he's traded, whatever the case may be, because if Mohamed Sanu is going to generate a second-round pick last year and Emmanuel Sanders is going to generate a third-round pick last year, what can you get for an Allen Robinson this year? It could be the market corrects and that teams say, holy crap, what were the Patriots and the 49ers thinking respectively last year for what they gave up for Sanu and Sanders. The other argument is the market's been set. You want a receiver who's going to be the proverbial final piece to your puzzle. You're trying to go all in to make a championship run. We got a guy that could potentially help you out. And I think that's part of the reason why the Bears need to play this cool, not give in now, because it could be if they wait a few weeks, the value goes up.
Yeah, no question. You have injuries at the receiver position and everything else that goes on there, and teams are going to be looking for receivers. I immediately, though, you talked about last year, the Patriots trading for Sanu, and the 49ers also looked at Sanu before getting Emmanuel Sanders. I look at the Patriots and say, could they use an Allen Robinson? Absolutely they could. So that might be a team that you look at in a few weeks. The Bears make a phone call and say, hey, what are you willing to give us for Allen Robinson? He's a much better player than Mohamed Sanu was. Can you give us more than you gave for Mohamed Sanu last year? So that would be a team you look at right away. But there are going to be some receiver injuries and some places that Allen Robinson can go if the Bears don't want to give him what he wants.
Yeah, whether it's injuries in the short term or whether it's that team that wants to go all in as the trade deadline arrives, there is some flexibility there. I think the question becomes, how extensively will Robinson be used by the Bears once he's made it clear that he wants out? Will they find a way to keep him off the field like Jalen Ramsey got several weeks off last year while the Jaguars were figuring out what to do with him? And just like it was Sanu and Sanders last year, Allen Robinson can have company on the trade market this year. And I know this one hasn't gotten there yet, but I'm trying to get ahead of the curve. I believe the Browns should trade Odell Beckham Jr. I believe that things went off the rails for the Browns the moment they acquired Odell Beckham Jr. in that stunning first day of the league year trade in 2019. And so far, in year two, the year that it was supposed to be better, how about 10 targets for 3 catches and 22 yards for Odell Beckham Jr. in the first game against the Ravens? Now, look, it was the Ravens in Baltimore. What were you going to – I mean, what are you going to – but still, if this guy's one of the top receivers in the NFL, Shereen, we need to see more production from Odell Beckham Jr. Let's hear some sound from Odell Beckham Jr. from earlier today on both winning games and producing, neither of which the Browns have been doing much lately.
You have to watch everything you do. Everyone's always watching. You know, if you don't have the same reaction that somebody may like, then a story, a headline, or whatever can be written about you. So, that's always tough. That's just the position I'm in. I've helped put myself in that position by some mistakes and a lot of by what I did on the field, all of the good things that I feel like we often forget about, but that's just kind of helped put me in this position where the spotlight is always going to be on me, right, wrong, and different, and just know that that's something you got to deal with. I think once I get you all, the world, everyone to understand that I care about one thing, and that's winning and producing, I think that you'll be able to see some of the other actions and look at it from a different perspective than a perspective of a lot of the names and attachments that have been thrown on me in a way.
I have held out hope, Shereen, that Odell Beckham Jr. is maturing to the point where he understands that with fame comes attention, comes scrutiny, and that you can't pick and choose what kind of attention you're going to get. The slogan that I've applied in the past to him and other players is, hey, everybody, look at me. What the hell are you looking at? You can't get upset if people are obsessed with you once you've injected yourself into that stream, that jet stream of fame. And he shouldn't be talking about it at this point. It shouldn't be an issue. And I don't know what question he was asked to get there. But this guy is at a point in his career where he needs to embrace the fact that he's famous. He needs to accept the good and the bad that goes along with it. He needs to understand that this is just the reality of the life that he is leading, and he needs to produce. And 3 catches for 22 yards is not acceptable. Last year, even with the injuries he was dealing with, and he had that groin, core muscle, hernia, they never quite know what to call it, but he had over 1,000 receiving yards, even though he was plagued with an injury that first popped up during training camp. He's got the potential to be really, really good. I think the problem is teams know if you can take away Odell Beckham Jr., it creates extra stress and dysfunction for that team, and that dysfunction isn't going to go away until Beckham gets traded.
Well, and you go back, Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham have talked about chemistry repeatedly since the Browns acquired him. And they said, oh, it's going to be better this year during the offseason. They worked together. And now they're saying after week one, oh, it's going to be better. We just need to work on it. This isn't the point to work on it. If it's not good at this point, it's certainly not natural. I just have a hard time seeing them developing any kind of chemistry. So the Browns are in a difficult spot, as are the Bears, because they have a decision to make on Odell Beckham. Can he be the receiver they think he can be, that he was his first 3 seasons in the NFL, or do they need to look elsewhere and move on from him? to me, they spend too much time, Baker Mayfield does, trying to target Odell Beckham when he's not open. I mean, the 10 targets and the three catches tell you that from game one. And yes, it was the Ravens, but they just try to target him way too much. And I think if he's not there, they have so many other weapons. They can spread the ball out. I mean, I would argue they didn't give Nick Chubb enough carries after the first quarter the other day, and they're trying to force the ball into Odell Beckham. And yes, I know they got behind quickly in all of that, but you know, they have so many weapons. I think it's time for them to look elsewhere. And the most damning thing to me is he's played 7 AFC North games, 21 catches, 296 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And we know the AFC North has some really good defenses, at least 2 really good defenses that he plays, but he has not been good in those division games. And that's when you need to be at your best. So I don't see the chemistry coming. I don't see him being good against AFC North teams. I think it's time for the Browns to see what they can get for him. Same deal with Allen Robinson. Wait a while. Come trade deadline. Somebody's going to give you something very valuable for Odell Beckham, I would expect.
It's almost laughable when you look at the quote from Baker Mayfield today about it, on the chemistry, the connection, the symbiosis between him and his receiver. I think it has to come naturally. We're working on that. No, no, it has to come naturally. Period. End of statement. Full stop. You can't work on it. It's either there or it's not. And look, Shereem, Baker Mayfield comes to Cleveland, takes the town by storm. He's the new LeBron James. He's everything Johnny Manziel wasn't. That was the fascination of the Browns fan after the 2018 season. So, Freddie Kitchens gets the job. First mistake. Second mistake, you wedge the square peg of Odell Beckham Jr. into the round hole. I think Cleveland isn't big enough for both of those personalities. I think they never properly connected. I think the coaching staff is part of the reason for it. It just didn't work. Beckham wasn't committed to Cleveland. Beckham probably didn't want to be traded to Cleveland. Beckham probably had a bad attitude about it from the get-go. And it all has felt forced. It has never felt natural. What has felt natural is Odell Beckham Jr.'s endless desire to play for the Patriots. You talked earlier about the Patriots being a possible destination for Allen Robinson. I still think the Patriots are a possible destination for Odell Beckham Jr. And now that Cam Newton is there, it makes it even more sensible than it would have been right after Tom Brady left. You know, when Tom Brady left, I thought, well, there goes the OBJ to New England thing, and there goes OBJ to Tampa because they don't need him. They got too many receivers there. But you know what? With Cam Newton looking like the old Cam Newton, I think the door opens up again to New England, because it was clear last year when Beckham talked about the Patriots, as they got ready to play New England, that's where he wants to be.
How much would you love to see that too? Cam Newton throwing to Odell Beckham. What a great matchup that way. It would remind me of Tom Brady when the year he had Randy Moss and threw for the 50 touchdowns. It was incredible. And I could see that happening again with Cam Newton if he had Odell Beckham on his team. And you wouldn't have to force the ball into Odell Beckham in New England. It wouldn't be like that. They don't have as many of those big name weapons who are going to demand the ball like they do in Cleveland. I just think that would be a natural fit for Odell Beckham to go there. And Bill Belichick has shown that he's great with stars like that. He's done it time after time after time, aside from AB last year, the failed experiment after one game. But he does a great job with all those guys he brings in like that, and they seem to excel there when they haven't excelled elsewhere. And it's time for Odell Beckham to go and to be the receiver that he was his first 3 years, because he hadn't looked anything like that since then. And I know there was the injury in there, some questions at quarterback, there's all those things. But he has not lived up to his potential because of all those things. And I think if he goes with a good offensive coordinator in a good offense with a good quarterback, he can be the guy we think he is, which is one of the best receivers in football.
And we never really know what's going on behind the scenes. We base our assessments on the things that we see and hear. And would we be stunned to know that behind the scenes, Beckham wants out? Would we be stunned to know that Baker Mayfield would like him to be gone? So Baker can just go back to throw the ball to the open guy. That's what it should be. It should not be force it to Odell Beckham Jr. It shouldn't be the Randy ratio that the Vikings once used to poor outcome. Just throw to the open guy. This extra stress. It's hard enough to play quarterback without having to get the ball to this guy that's going to talk to the media about why I'm not getting the ball, and then other guys are talking about getting the ball. No, You just get the ball to the open guy. Go get open. And if one guy is double covered, triple covered, I'm going to throw it to someone else, and I don't want to have to worry about the guy who's double covered complaining about it. And Baker Mayfield needs something, Shireen, because as someone tweeted last night to significant approval on Twitter, you have been hanging around me too long. I've corrupted you after only one day
apparently.
On FTPN. The kind of tweet that I would be proud of. Baker Mayfield has more career commercials than he has career wins. And that screenshot was taken when there were only 4.7 thousand likes. The last time I saw it, it had over 24,000, and that was a few hours ago. So you have touched the collective nerve of the American conscious and unconscious with that tweet. So sorry, Baker Mayfield, but something needs to happen to turn that guy's career around. All right, Matt Casey, do we need a break or can we talk about Vic Fangio real quickly? All right, here we go. Vic Fangio, he admitted after last night, I got to respect it. Last night, after the Broncos lose to the Titans and they take two timeouts with them, Vic Fangio defended his failure to use all of his timeouts to have time left so that the Broncos could try to come back and win the game. They ultimately lost by two. Fangio has admitted twice today, both on KOA radio in Denver and at his day after press conference, he should have called the timeouts. Look, I like the fact that he didn't double down. It's okay to admit you were wrong. In the heat of the moment after the game, he thought he was doing the right thing. He's gone back, he's looked at it, he's learned from it. I applaud Vic Fangio for admitting that he should have taking the timeouts. It's the next best thing to actually realizing in the moment he should have taken the timeouts.
At the same time, Mike, why is he making this mistake in his second year as a head coach? I mean, to me, you hire a clock manager and you listen to that guy and you say, hey, here's what we want to do. You talk during the timeout before the Titans take their first snap. Here's what we want to do. This is how much time we want to save. If they move the ball, if they do this. And then you listen to your clock manager. If he's telling you to take a timeout, you trust him to take a timeout. That all these thoughts shouldn't be going through your head. Well, they're going to miss another field goal. You can't rely on that. You need the time. And they only needed a few more seconds to move into field goal range. The worst play was the Derrick Henry run. It was 1:33 left on the clock, and they ticked it down to 49 seconds before they went to another run. And when the Titans finally called timeout, on the second one, you can see Vrabel looking over to see it, waiting to see if Denver's going to call timeout. And I'm screaming, timeout, 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 and it's not coming. And Vrabel finally calls the timeout himself, but he wanted Denver to burn the timeout and realize, you know, I don't know what Vic Fangio's doing, but I've got to call timeout here and use one of his timeouts. They only needed a few more seconds, Mike, and they're in field goal range, and they win that game. To me, it was just an utter abomination of coaching there at the end of that game with walking into the locker room with two timeouts still in your pocket.
Yeah, they let the clock run from 127 to 49 seconds after the Titans got first down on the 16. And that's extra point field goal range there. Then after the next play, that's when it got ridiculous. And they had a shot at one point of Vic Fangio. And if he had two or three or four Super Bowl rings, I'd say it was Bill Belichick and the Jedi mind trick that he played on the Seahawks at the end of Super Bowl 49. But Belichick looked across the field and he saw dysfunction and disarray, and he sensed that if he just, you know, it's the old adage, if your opponent is dancing on the edge of the cliff, don't throw them a lifeline. Let's just let it all keep playing out. And it kind of felt like they were doing that, but the difference is Super Bowl 49, the Patriots were defending the end zone, not the goalposts. And as someone pointed out to me today, just because Gostkowski missed all those kicks, you know, Steph Curry can miss some free throws early in a game, but he's still a 90% free throw shooter. He's going to make it if you let him get closer and closer to the target. And that's what ultimately the Broncos let the Titans do. So it was a huge mistake, and it left them one more play and they would have been close
one
enough for a Brandon McManus field goal. And you know, one thing that didn't come up yesterday at all, the broadcast didn't mention it, and it didn't look like there was serious consideration given to it, the opportunity for what I think would have been, I was always told 17 yards is what you add to the snap. I don't know, maybe when it's a long kick, you have to add another one. Vic Fangio said today they considered very briefly a 75-yard field goal attempt. I counted it as 74 yards, and it's important because Brandon McManus has made, in practice against the live rush, a 73-yard field goal in Denver where the air is thin. And I feel like we were robbed. And I know that the Hail Mary, they don't have Gronk playing deep safety. You're not going to make that happen, especially with the play they called. I think we were robbed of a chance to at least anticipate, at least sit on the edge of our seats and see whether or not Brandon McManus could explode the ball 74 yards for a field goal that would have set a record by 10 yards and won a game.
That would have been exciting. And in the altitude of Denver, you never put it past the kicker to make a record. I mean, they've done it before in Denver. So I would have loved to have seen that. Again, I would have loved to have seen them have one more play to maybe get a few yards closer. And I think he would have had a great chance to make that. And wouldn't it have been ironic if Gostkowski missed all those kicks and it comes back and Brandon McManus sets an NFL record with a field goal that wins the game? Didn't happen. And that was probably their best chance at that point, considering that they were not going to get the ball to the end zone. They were on their own 43 at that point, I believe. But they were not going to get the ball all the way to the end zone. And the chances of any kind of Hail Mary or hook and ladder or anything else were probably nil. Their best chance was probably let Brandon McManus try to kick that field goal. As slim a hope as that was, it was probably a better chance than what they ended up doing.
And here's the thing, too. It shows you got faith in your guy and you're willing to let him cut it loose. And look, yeah, the story is, hey, you know, we should have been blown out in this game. Steven Gostkowski misses all these kicks. And otherwise, you know, if he makes them, we're down by 10 points. This is the ultimate opportunity to steal a victory from the jaws of defeat. And he goes out there with nothing to lose. And you know, we don't see those long field goal attempts because the planets rarely line up just right for it. The planets were aligned for it perfectly. And they should have done it. They should have let him try it, especially when you consider the play that they called. They didn't throw it to the end zone. They tried a hook and ladder, and there was no hook there. The ball lands in a giant sea of green, and that's the end of the game. All right, that's the end of the first segment. When we return, week one rewatch, Cowboys-Rams. We're going to talk about what we saw when we look back at the Sunday night game that saw the Rams go to 1-0. We'll do that when PFTPM continues right after this.
If you could make up a word that doesn't currently exist to describe Aaron Donald and what he does on a field, what would you have that word be?
I don't know. Well, I don't know what's a word that doesn't exist. It's more of an expression. I have no idea. It's unbelievable, though. But how about that? That's an answer for you, huh?
Hey, Coach McVay, if you want some words that don't exist, you need to talk to our guy, Chris Sims. He can naturally... More naturally than Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. will ever have chemistry, Chris Sims naturally comes up with words that don't exist, and then they are forever recorded in the book of Simsisms. That's Sean McVay talking about Aaron Donald, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, surefire Hall of Famer, still one of the most disruptive forces in the NFL, even when you put three guys on him. All right, here's what we did, and this is something we're going to do on a regular basis. We're going to go back, games from the prior weekend, rewatch them, talk about them in depth. Shireen's choice this week, the Cowboys and the Rams. I'm stunned.
What a
shocker. That you selected the Cowboys game. Although the Cowboys lost. If I'd have had my pick, I wouldn't have gone and stared at the wound of the Vikings getting their butts kicked by the Packers. So we go Cowboys, Rams, and we got some structure to this. And let's start with this. Who was the best player on the field based upon what you saw the second time?
Well, I wish I could see that word or rephrase that word that Sean McVay just used. But anytime Aaron Donald's on the field, I think he's the best player on the field almost always. I mean, nine quarterbacks, he's the best player on the field every single time. You got to double him. You got to triple him. He was everywhere, just as he always is. Four tackles, a sack, very disruptive. He's a man among boys, and he continues to be. And I think when we start to talk about Defensive Player of the Year from start to finish, we talk about Aaron Donald. But Jalen Ramsey, for me, was a close second. I thought he played fantastic, especially in man coverage. They did play quite a bit of zone. I didn't really notice that when I initially watched the game, but rewatching the game this morning, it looked like they played quite a bit of zone against the Cowboys. And maybe when you have three receivers, and then they had a tight end for a while with Blake Jarwin in there, you do that, and Zeke Elliott. But when he was in man coverage, especially at the end of the game, he was fantastic. So it was a close second for Jalen Ramsey. But Aaron Donald, I mean, he's the best player anytime he's on the field.
And I'd go with that same assessment. And the thing that separates Jalen Ramsey on Sunday night was the fact that he sold the OPI that wiped the big gain off the board that would have potentially forced overtime or ultimately resulted in the Cowboys winning the game in regulation with that body language as he, you know, he's getting that shove, and it's not a full-blown flop. It's just enough of a lean back to draw the flag, and it worked. And that was a genius move by Jalen Ramsey. Also got to give some love to Alden Smith, first game in 5 years. Yeah. And he needs to lose some weight. I mean, frankly, I do too. But, you know, he looks a little thicker than what we're used to. He's not as lean as he was. He's not as long as he was. And even in that blue jersey that should be more slimming than the white jersey, both he and Everson Griffin looked a little over their ideal weights to me, which tells me this. As these guys get in better shape, that pass rush is going to get better. And I saw DeMarcus Lawrence getting doubled from time to time. That opens up opportunities for Alden Smith and for Everson Griffin. And I think that as we see, especially Smith, get into game shape, Shireen, he's going to be even more destructive and disruptive than he was his first game back in nearly 5 years.
10 tackles and a sack, Mike. That's the first time since 2012 a Cowboys player has accomplished that, and that was Anthony Spencer. So it's been a long time. So not having played in 5 years, that was fantastic performance, and I think bigger and better thing to come. And we may see him look a lot like he did his first couple of years in the league. I mean, that was impressive, having laid off that long. There was no rust whatsoever.
Yeah, he had 42 sacks in his first 43 regular season games, which is uncanny. And now he's 1-for-1 in his return. We love a good redemption story, and the sky's the limit, possibly, for Alden Smith. All right, who had a game they'd like to forget, Shireen?
Well, I think you point to Greg Zuerlein. You know, I know it was a long field goal, but the 53-yarder he missed in the first half, he's made a ton of those. He's made 58.9% of his 50-yarders in his career, counting the one that he missed the other night. And he just expects to make those. And he said he would love to have that one back. And, of course, at that point, it would have been a tie game, and it would have been a no-brainer there on fourth down. You kick the field goal to take the lead late in the game, 23-20. But they didn't have a tie game, and they chose not to kick the field goal at that point. He did make a 33-yarder, but him going against his former team with John Fossil, the special teams coordinator who had gone from the Rams to the Cowboys, I think it was really big for him, and he would have loved to have made that one, especially if it would have made that big of a difference in the game.
I'll tell you what, I am going to go with Kellen Moore, the play caller for the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah. He's calling the plays, right? He's still calling the plays. He's running the offense. He's calling the plays. He should want to blame that on someone else for the final drive of the game. They got the ball back with more than well over 2 minutes. I think it was like 2:28 when they get the ball back. And I know they have a long way to go, but they only need a field goal to force overtime. And the clock's just bleeding. Like, it just was lackadaisical.
No
and
rhythm.
Some of that's on Dak Prescott, too. But they never could get it going. There was a lot of short passes, Shireen, that weren't thrown toward the sidelines with the idea of stopping the clock. I think that they got lulled into thinking, we got plenty of time. There's 2:28 left. They only had one timeout remaining. But, like, all of a sudden, they're down to 40 seconds. And that's when they uncorked the long throw to Michael Gallup, almost as kind of quasi-desperation, because they had allowed so much of that time they had to trickle away, and they only moved the ball like 20 yards. So I really think if you're Kellen Moore, you got to go back and you got to assess what's your plan. Because at the end of the first half, they moved the ball effectively and efficiently and got a touchdown to take the lead 14-13. Where was that with the game on the line when all you need is a field goal? I was stunned when you watched that again. You know, it's almost like when you have that nightmare and you're trying to run away from someone and it feels like you're running in mud, you're running in slow motion, you can't get away. I just felt like that's what their entire offense was doing on that last drive.
Well, and Cowboys fans still are questioning why Mike McCarthy isn't calling the play, something that he wouldn't give up in Green Bay. He's allowing Kellen Moore to do it. He's in his second year of doing it, first game of his second year. And to me, it was not a very good, well-called game, and a lot of questions in that, especially you're right at that last drive that they had. But we're going to get into some more of the third down and fourth down plays there when they decided to not kick the field goal and go for it. But there were some questionable calls in that game by Kellen Moore.
Let's stick with that, Shireen. The play that I think was the most significant of the game, both from a call standpoint and from an execution and design standpoint, the 4th-and-3 with plenty of time left in the game, right? My preference in that spot, take the field goal, tie the game, assuming the field goal is good, and who knows, with Greg Zuerlein, maybe it wouldn't have been good, but it wasn't a 50-plus yarder. It was a kick he should have made. Make it a tie game and move forward. Instead, the third down play. And when you go back and look at that, I noticed
one.
And I noticed two things. The first of all, the play, as Chris Collinsworth pointed out in real time, the safety weaving around traffic and making the stop short of the sticks was impressive. But also, to put the ball in the hands of a rookie who, I think, when you look at CeeDee Lamb's body language after he makes the catch, I don't think he had any idea there was someone right on top of him. There was none of that effort to stick the ball out, to lunge his body forward. It looked like he was trying to just think about, where, you know, is he going to go to the sideline? Is he going to cut it up? And the next thing you know, he's got someone on top of him before he can get to the line to gain.
I am certain that they talked about this and they had decided they're going to go for it. They faced a 3rd and 6. But to me, that was an egregious play call there to run the ball with Ezekiel Elliott. And I know they thought they were going to catch the Rams flat-footed on that by going to the run. But, I mean, this is a game where Ezekiel Elliott averaged 4.4 yards a carry. Again, didn't have any runs over 20 yards, which we know he only had 4 last year. He didn't pick up the first down. So now you face a 4th and 3, and you go to your rookie receiver, who I know we think is going to be really good. But he's in his first game, no preseason. He doesn't run beyond the sticks. A rookie error right there. And he probably didn't know that Jordan Fuller was right there, but no effort to make the first down once that Jordan Fuller was there. And it was just a huge, to me, it was more on the play caller and the decision by Dak Prescott, perhaps, than it was by CeeDee Lamb not getting there to the sticks. But yeah, rookie error and all those things just combined to now the Rams have the ball, and you never get any closer to that to tie in the game or winning the game. Cowboys fans wanted this coach to be aggressive. He was aggressive. It's hard to argue about him deciding to go for it on 4th down, but I would have liked for them to do something different on that 3rd down play.
And then they still had the chance to tie the game and or win it. We talked about the OPI call that was sold aggressively and successfully by Rams cornerback Jalen Ramsey. Here's Mike McCarthy, coach of the Cowboys, in the aftermath of the game one day later, talking about the decision to wipe that big gain off the board.
I mean, the Michael Gallup call, I mean, it's just made me sick when I watched the TV copy. I thought Michael ran an excellent route. He gets his hips over top of the DBs, and DB attempts to clamp his arm, and actually is clamped his arm, and he pulls his arm out and makes a catch. It's definitely a call you like to see not happen. And I know everybody wants to talk about the time of the game and the way the game was called to that point, but at the end of the day, it was an excellent route and throw and completion by Michael Gallup and Dak.
I think it's funny. He says everybody wants to talk about the time of the game. He's the one that talked about the time of the game. He's the one that said this is the time of the game where you don't make that call. And he's right.
Nothing.
He pivoted on Monday to the idea that at any time of the game, that call shouldn't be made. And, hey, Shereen, maybe I'm forgetting or not properly understanding how this works, but aren't you supposed to not be criticizing the officiating? It's going to be interesting to see whether or not Mike McCarthy ends up getting a letter from the league. The league's more concerned about guys wearing their masks. Maybe he's found an opportunity to criticize the officials when the league's otherwise got its hands full. But this is the kind of thing they don't want coaches to do, because he is dangerously close to the line, if not over the line, by pointing out that he doesn't believe that call should have been made. And pass interference, obviously, in recent years has become a sore subject for the NFL.
And Mike, I asked this in my post yesterday. If that's not Jalen Ramsey, if it's not one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL that sells that play, does that flag get thrown? And I, watching it again today, I watched it multiple times. I did see 2 flags, and they did come out, I would say, really quickly before Jalen really, really starts selling it. They were quick flags, and there were 2 flags. There wasn't just 1 flag. But I still question whether if that wasn't Jalen Ramsey on Michael Gallup, if that flag is thrown.
Real quickly on the way out, give me a guy who wasn't as good or as bad as you first thought after further review of the game.
Oh, I would say Dalton Schultz, the Cowboys backup tight end, and they're going to be relying on him a lot. And they used a fairly high pick, a third day pick on him. And he's done nothing in his career. He's in the last year of his contract, was not expected to do much this year. And now Blake Jarwin's hurt, and they're going to be counting on him. I thought he was better than I thought he has been in the last couple of years.
For me, it was Jared Goff, but not that he was as good or as bad as I originally thought. I emerged with no opinion. I thought I'd watch it again and think, hey, you know what, he was pretty good, or oh, you know what, he was pretty bad. It was a mixed bag for Jared Goff. He had that great throw on that 3rd down conversion to Josh Reynolds, where he was covered.
Yeah.
He was covered. And he put the ball in the only spot where it could have been made to extend the drive. But then, you know, he's got that long looping motion. There was a ball that was tipped, I think, by Everson Griffin at the line of scrimmage. And there was a screen pass. And I don't know. I'm anxious to see whether they ask him about it this week. There was a screen pass they set up with motion to the other side, and Robert Woods was open. And Goff, like, threw the ball into the ground, and it came up, and it hit the offensive lineman right in the ass. And I'm thinking, man, that was ugly. But then when you look, there was a Cowboys player closing on that hard, and I wondered whether that was an abort, a smart abort by Jared Goff to see that that play was red and it was going to get ugly. The guy was going to get blown up or maybe picked off, but it was an ugly-looking throw at the moment, but it may have been a smart move by Goff. So I don't know. He was neither. And I didn't expect to watch that game back and emerge thinking Jared Goff was neither good nor bad. All right, when we return, the good coming out of week one of the 2020 season. Michael David Smith is going to join us for a fairly rapid-fire session of awards for week one. More PFT PM coming at you right after this.
It's really about the bind that Cam Newton and Josh McDaniels have combined to screw you over with. That's what it's really doing. So, okay, formations, yeah, motions, all these things we got to worry about. Oh, we got to worry about being outnumbered in the run. We got to worry about Cam Newton getting on the edge and then tossing the ball on the option. We got to worry about Cam Newton giving the ball on the speed sweep so they can spread you wide. And then it's, oh, bam, Cam up the middle. Other running back up the middle. Oh, wait. He didn't run up the middle. It's a play-action pass. Julian Edelman's behind us. I mean, that's where he really stresses you out, let alone New England knows the right concepts to always figure it out there.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm going to be interested to see how teams attack New England going forward.
Chris Sims taking a deeper look at the New England game. That's Chris Sims Unbuttoned. There's the full lineup for Peacock, 7 a.m. Eastern. You'll see Chris and me tomorrow morning talking NFL. What else on Pro Football Talk Live? All right, Michael David Smith, managing editor of ProFootballTalk.com, joins us now. A Tuesday tradition after a regular season weekend of games, and I think we do it in the postseason too. Awards for week one. Hello, MDS. How are you?
Hello, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. This is the first three box we've tried on PFTPM. So far, so good. And let's get right to it. We don't have a lot of time. Offensive player of the week for week one, MDS, who do you have?
I have Aaron Rodgers. And I'll tell you, in my opinion, Aaron Rodgers played better on Sunday than he played in any game last year. Last year, the Packers had a good season, got to the NFC Championship game. I thought Aaron Rodgers, though, was starting to show a little age. Maybe not quite up to par, but I thought he looked very comfortable in Matt LaFleur's offense. I thought he wasn't just improvising when plays broke down. He was making plays. I thought he had a great, great game.
Yeah, excellent choice. And, oh, by the way, Dom Capers, former Packers defensive coordinator, now on the Vikings staff, didn't offer much by way of assistance in solving Aaron Rodgers. Shireen, who do you have?
Sure, you're going to be stunned, Mike, but I'm going to pick Kyler Murray, the ex-A&M quarterback who transferred obviously to Oklahoma. I have had an epiphany. 13 for 91, as MDS pointed out. He took some kneel downs at the end of that game that would have put him over 100 yards rushing, passed for 230, a touchdown and an interception. But I thought he looked great, and he just seems to be getting better and better and better with every game he plays. And I think the Cardinals can be a force in the NFL with Kyler playing the way he is.
And memo to Odell Beckham Jr. and Baker Mayfield, look at Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. That's natural chemistry. That's 14 catches right out of the gates, even when everyone knows yes. Hopkins is getting the ball. For me, it's Lamar Jackson. Picked up where he left off last year. The Ravens quarterback, the MVP. John Harbaugh told me after the game he played almost as well as he could have played, and they've seen the growth in him. This was only his 23rd regular season start. He's only going to get better and better, which is flat out scary for everyone that has to play the Baltimore Ravens. All right, defensive player of the week, MDS.
I'm going with Aaron Donald. I think Shireen said earlier on the show that when he's on the field, he's just the best football player on the field. And that was what I kept thinking on Sunday night. He just dominates up front. He is so hard to block. He brings so much pressure. There's just not a good game plan for him. You don't look at Aaron Donald wrecking an offense and say, boy, that offensive line isn't playing well. That scheme isn't sound. You just say, there's nothing you can do about this guy. He was outstanding, as he so often is.
Shireen, who'd you have?
I wish I could pick the entire Washington defense, but we only pick one player. So I'm going to pick Ryan Kerrigan, who had two of the eight sacks that Washington had. But any of those linemen, defensive linemen, could have been a great pick. I mean, Chase Young had a terrific game. They just keep coming at you in waves with first-round picks and making those sacks, and they just made the Eagles and Carson Wentz disappear.
Yeah, and Ryan Kerrigan along the way becoming the all-time franchise leader in sacks. He's got 92 now, one more than Dexter Manley, the great and legendary Dexter Manley at 91. For me, it was Bud Dupree, the Steelers linebacker. No long-term deal, franchise tag, contract year, $15.8 million, and putting himself in position to get a big payday with that disruption last night. Two tackles behind the line of scrimmage of Saquon Barkley. The big hit on Daniel Jones to force the interception that ended the drive that could have put the Giants ahead in the second half, 17-16. Bud Dupree getting it done for the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, coach of the week, MDS, who do you have?
Well, I've got Ron Rivera, and I think we would all agree the Washington football team exceeded expectations in week one, and Ron Rivera had them looking like a better football team than we saw them when they weren't the football team the last few years. But I want to also specifically note there was a fourth down in the fourth quarter where he brought out that Riverboat Ron personality, and he said afterward, "I just wanted to show my guys I believed in them." And I really liked that fourth down. They went for it on fourth and one. Two plays later, they were in the touch. They were in the end zone. That was the game-winning touchdown. I thought that was a great call and a great game played by Ron Rivera's football team.
Awesome moment, awesome game. Coming from 17-0 down to win that game. Great moment for the team and a new age for that franchise. Shireen, who do you have?
Well, almost any week you can pick Bill Belichick, but I'm going to pick Bill Belichick for what they did with Cam Newton. They've made him look like an MVP candidate again, at least for one week against the Miami Dolphins, who maybe were overrated a little bit coming into the year. But he looked great, and I think it was a lot because of Belichick. And all those opt-outs they had are all forgotten right now with the way they played Sunday.
Yeah, it's like the Coach of the Year award. Belichick could be the coach every year because he is the best coach in the NFL, and he hasn't won it nearly as many times as he should. One guy who won it a couple of years ago in his first year as an NFL head coach, Matt Nagy, the Bears, had a rough 2019, but look, made the decision to go with Mitchell Trubisky, down 23-6 against the Detroit Lions, and yes, it was the Lions, and they tend to shoot themselves in the foot, but at the same time, Nagy went into that game with Trubisky as his guy. It came through. Trubisky made the big throw to Anthony Miller for the go-ahead touchdown, and Nagy's decision pays off, at least for the first week. And the thing about it is, when it works, it gets everyone to buy in. If there was anyone in the locker room that had misgivings about Trubisky, they don't now, and you build some momentum, and maybe you get off to the right start, and you put some wins together, and the next thing you know, the Bears are in the mix for a playoff spot this year. All right, we saw rookies for the first time in their NFL uniforms on a football field because there was no preseason. MDS, who was your rookie of the week for week one?
Well, I'm going with the first pick in the draft, Joe Burrow, and you know, he said after the game that he would give himself a D. I thought he was awfully hard on himself. I really liked the way he played, particularly on that last drive where he threw for what appeared to be the game-winning touchdown. Now, it got called back on a penalty, then the Bengals missed the game-time field goal attempt. It comes out as Joe Burrow loses his first start, but I thought Joe Burrow looked really good. I loved his poise, marching them down the field at the end there, and I think the Bengals have to be very satisfied with it. They didn't get the win.
I'm surprised he gave himself a D. Joe Burrow strikes me as the kind of guy who would give himself an F because it's pass-fail. And if you win, you pass. And if you lose, you fail. Period. And I think, and look, he passed the smell test. He passed the eyeball test. But he's going to have to do more to get some wins for the Bengals because they're still the Bengals. They earned that first overall pick for a reason. All right, Shireen, who'd you have?
Well, it seems like a week ago, and it is almost a week ago, that the Kansas City Chiefs played. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think, brought a different dimension to that Chiefs offense. And it reminded me of back when Kareem Hunt, as a rookie, led the league in rushing. And that was the best offense, I think, that the Chiefs had. And they look like they've gone back to that. He's better than any of the D. Williams that the Chiefs have had at running back. And had 138 yards in his debut, and it was just a terrific debut, 5.5 average. He was great and looks makes the Chiefs offense look a lot different than what it did last year. Better.
I'm going with CJ Henderson, the Jaguars rookie corner. It's always risky to take a corner with a first round pick after you move on from a great cornerback like Jalen Ramsey. Remember D. Milner? Good. Nobody else does. I mean, he was the guy who supposedly replaced Darrell Revis through a first-round draft pick. It never worked out. It's going to work out for C.J. Henderson. He broke up three passes. He had an interception to Phillip Rivers. And the Jaguars, one of the most stunning outcomes of Week 1, guys, that no one's talking about, somehow beat the Colts and moved to 1-0 with all those rookies led by C.J. Henderson. All right, that was a quick hour. MDS, Shireen, I'll give each of you a final word on the way out the door on Week 1. MDS, go.
I think the big thing to me was that Washington football team. They were the most exciting surprise to me.
Shireen?
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that completely. And I was going to mention Chase Young as an honorable mention for Rookie of the Week because he was really, really good. They're good.
And I said to Ryan Kerrigan after the game, with 8 sacks, you guys need a nickname for that defense. He said, let's do it a second time before we start coming up with nicknames. All right, no nicknames for this show unless they're good. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.